This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, with the 2010 London Symposium. Proposition: Medicine of Primitive Man. Medicine of Primitive Man. What is the medicine of primitive man? Have you any idea? Have you any idea what the medicine of primitive man was?
Unconditional love.
What's that?
Unconditional love.
Yes.
Awareness.
What?
Awareness.
Awareness, yes.
Intuition.
Intuition.
Yeah.
You're getting closer.
I thought it was preventive.
No. What did we ask? We asked the question, medicine of primitive man. What is the medicine of primitive man? Thought. 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 Primitive man was even better than man today. Primitive man did not think of illnesses, did not think of problems, did not think of these things. He did not have them in his thought. He was free of that and clear of that. Now, how was he free and clear of that? He was free and clear of that because he was healthy. He was healthy. Now, when he went near a fire, he felt the fire, so he stayed away from it because it would keep heat. When he saw animals that were bigger than he was, he'd stay away from them. He'd go after animals that were his size. Now, he didn't even have animals. Primitive man just ate the things that were available in the field, the trees and the plants and various things. But in his cave or in his den or whatever it was that he had, something had died and they'd taken the coat off, the skin, and they brought it back to his wife to prepare for whatever she was going to do with it. You know, they had to make the first leather tanning operation. And probably some chunks of meat were along with it. And of course, they didn't eat meat because they didn't eat meat. They were not meat eaters. The original mankind was totally herbivorous, not at all meat eating. Well, then some of the meat fell in the fire off of this skin that they were in. And it smells so good, you know. That cooked meat was just really terrific. And so the dogs were ready to eat it instantly, you know, cooked or not. And then the man grabbed it away from the dog and he'd take it home. That's pretty good. And really, that's what started them into their hunting sequence. But they weren't ready for that. They didn't have teeth that were made for chewing meat. They had teeth for grinding grains and grinding herbs and things like that. And this was what and that's very healthy. Very healthy. Now, I don't want to suggest that everyone has to become a vegetarian. That's your choice individually, but if everyone were a pure vegetarian, they wouldn't have to be fighting all the diseases and age things and all the stuff that they're doing. Because when you're a pure vegetarian, and of course you can't be a pure vegetarian, you've already messed yourself up. You've already messed yourself up by eating meat and doing all that stuff. Now, that you stop is good. If you are a smoker and you have emphysema, and that means you smoke pretty badly, and then you stop smoking, in 1 week, you will have 10% less emphysemic activity in your body. In 1 month, you will have 50% less. And then it starts going down a little slower. But then, eventually, if you stay off smoking for 20 years, you'll never have any indication you ever were a smoker. Now, there are some people who will say that you do, but that's because people cheat. They don't stay 20 years off smoking. They're in smoke-filled rooms. They eat smoke-filled things. They do a lot of things. See, we're not pure. We're not pure. We're doing things that we shouldn't do if we say we want to be away from smoke. Okay, now, if that can happen with smoke in your body, you know, and you no longer are manipulated, but your body is controlled by the limitation of smoke in your body, by just staying away from it for that period of time and permanently. What would happen if you really stayed and were an absolute vegetarian? What is an absolute vegetarian? Well, there's no milk. Mother's milk, you know, that's different. But there's no milk. And there's no...
Egg. That's the vegans, isn't it?
There's no bacon. There's
the vegans. The people...
Yeah.
They don't eat any sort of...
There's no meats, there's no eggs, there's no chickens,
there's no fish.
Yeah, these are all not vegetarian. Vegetarian is pure vegetable matter. Pure vegetable matter. Now, how was your vegetable matter fertilized? That's true. I mean, that's part of the imperfection of vegetable matter. And you talk about spraying things.
So the organic.
Yeah. Organic.
Even organic.
They use manure for organic things. But the thing is, purely not. The early Indians in the United States, they would take corn and plant it, and then they drop some fish in the place, and it would help the corn grow just beautifully, you know, because the fish would be dead, and the manure would make the soil grow beautifully, help the plant grow beautifully. Now, do you want to become a vegetarian? The answer is no. You are conditioned to. Rather enjoy a hamburger or steak or fish or chicken or turkey or whatever it is, eggs, yes, oh my goodness, yes, and milk, you know, and all these other things, and milk products when you bake and things like that. We're so tied to this. But if we were in a position where we had nothing to go to, no water where we can have fish, or no land where other animals live other than just ourselves, and then we'll kill each other and be cannibals. No, that is not man's nature. But it's possible that he could. So how do you become pure as that? Well, now I suggest you can become pure when you say, "I am pure." And you say, "Boy, hey, that's an easy road." That's an easy road. All right. Now, can you be like the early primitive medicines and say you're whole and perfect? The kid comes running in the house with a skinned knee, and his mother says, "Go wash it off and go out and play." No medicine on it or anything else like that. You're whole and perfect. You're fantastic. But mom, it hurts. Well, come here, I'll kiss it for you. And, you know, put her germs on it. And big deal. And he's whole and perfect. And when the kids, especially primitive children, are playing, they're outdoors with no clothes on. And they get dirty, and they go to the bathroom, and they do this and they do that, and they're not clean, they're not hygiene, and there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with them because they have within themselves a compatibility. We call it immunity. But it's a compatibility with everything. They're not fighting the disease germs. They're not fighting the germs that would be naturally. Within our body, scientists will tell you, is every possible disease germ that is known to man, and many that are not even known to man. Now, why are we not heir to having that make us ill? It cannot make us ill because we are like the early primitives. We're naive, you know? What happens when one airplane crashes?
In the news, everywhere.
Two more have to crash, because it's always three. Remember? Isn't that stupid? It's stupid, but this is what we have in our consciousness. All right? What happens when the flu season comes around, you got to get the flu.
Yes.
Now, in the airport, I heard of it in Japan and China where they put masks on to walk around because the pollution is so terrible. But here, in the airports, you know, Chicago and in here in London, on the airport they say, if you have a sneeze or if you have a cold, use your handkerchief and, you know, cover your mouth. Do not sneeze out. Do not broadcast it. Well, now, you don't know how much broadcasting goes on. Somebody walks into a building and there's nobody there and he sneezes, achoo, 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 spreads it everywhere, and then he leaves the building. Now, you don't know that he's been in there dressing up the atmosphere. And so you can walk in there, breathing away, you're running in, you know, you're breathing real deep because you're running so hard, and so you soak in all of this atmosphere, and you don't know it, and you're healthy, and you're happy, it doesn't disturb you in the slightest. You're not going to be disturbed by that. Now, you see, but that's contagious, you catch it, you have to do it. No, you don't. No, you don't. The Chinese medicine is so interesting. The doctors were not allowed to see a naked woman, and they had to work with her under her garment to help her do whatever had to be done, you know, have a baby or anything else like that, and any illnesses. And the doctors just were not able to do effective jobs with them, but yet they did. You know why the doctors were so successful? Because they could not see the illness. If the person had an illness, the doctor could not see it. He had just reach in there and feel it or something like that, and then he'd say, well, I guess we'll do this, you know. And he didn't realize that it was terrible, or he didn't realize that it was not terrible. And so therefore, he was not putting a cause in motion contrary to the best interest of that person, of the woman. And with men, what did the doctor do? What did the doctors, they learned from the Yellow Emperor? From the Yellow Emperor, about 8,000 years ago, they learned acupuncture. And how do they know what acupuncture is? A stupid thing. They don't know what acupuncture is. There's nothing on your body to tell you where those meridians are. You have no way. And yet they have maps made out with that, because they put the needles in there and they said, nah, this is all now. Well, who's got the brains to do this? Nobody. Nobody's got the brains to do this. But what did he have? Huh? What did he have?
Thoughts.
Come.
The thoughts. Thoughts.
Thoughts.
His
intuition.
His intuition. He felt that was where it was.
Yes.
He felt that. Now, if you take your thumb, you know, I told you this here, and you put it on the crotch of your forearm, and you have a headache. And I'm serious.
It works.
And you press down firmly. And you press down firmly and watch a video or read a book or something, and don't pay attention to it. And then you'll stop doing it, and you'll say, my headache's gone, you know. It's gone. Now, I'm sure that if we would read about it, and I've written about it a great deal, but if we'd read about it, we'd find out that there are many other pressure points on the body. Now, how do we know? Now, this gets rid of a headache. Now, why don't the doctors tell people, you got a migraine headache? Put your two thumbs in, you know, in the crutch here, and then shift and shift if you want, but press down. There is a meridian there that is doing something. Now, why that is a switch for the headache, why? Who would know? Who would know? And you have a hurt on your toe, that is, you have a needle put in your toe for a toothache. And all sorts of strange things. If you want to, you can read up on them, and they're very interesting. But that's intuitive medicine. That's medicine that took place and was written about centuries before modern medicine even started thinking of doing it. And this is what the country doctors do as they go around China. They have just a little bag of things. Now, I've been telling you a little bit about Caesar, the dog whisperer. Well, Caesar shook me up the other day as I was watching him. He had a dog that was not shaping up too quickly. He had some past history of something that had frightened him terribly, and he was just afraid of everything. So Caesar did everything he could to balance him, you know, made him know that he was his master and so forth. And then Caesar called in his friend who works with creatures on meditation. And so this person works with the dog on meditation, and it seemed to help a great deal. The dog was laying there in this little room that they had for meditation, with a Buddha sitting there, you know. And this lady was sitting there cross-legged, speaking her word and meditating for the dog. And it seemed to help. But she also was an acupuncturist. She was a doctor of whatever it was in acupuncture, and she had all of her certificates. And so she gave the dog acupuncture. So this dog is laying there, usually a very active dog, just laying there peacefully at a meditation. And she's in there poking needles into him everywhere, in his head, you know, in his ears, and in his legs. And yeah, and it's just fantastic. And he didn't mind. He just lay there. Ah, just wonderful. Now, this predates all of our present medicine. Now, how well it works depends on one thing, and you said it before. What is it?
Intuition.
No, I said intuition. Said thought. It depends on your thought. Now, do you believe this is going to work? Now, you don't have to believe it, but if you believe it, it exacerbates the thing so beautifully, it builds it up and makes it so great and so powerful that it's fantastic. But if you don't believe it, then, all right, now let's just give the answer to that. If you believe it, it releases all of your hormones and all of your enzymes and all your functions of your body to function harmoniously, if you believe. Ah, I believe that, I believe it. And if you don't believe it, tighten up.
Yeah.
All your enzymes, all your hormones, all your cells, what do you call it?
Stem cells.
No, not the stem cells. The stem cells aren't there just yet. They're there through it. But it bothers them too. But when you tighten up, you close off all of these
the enzymes
that what puts out the enzymes?
Capillaries.
No, it's a little.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Yeah. It has a name.
The enzyme glands.
That's right, the glands. See, it's a simple word. It's the glands that are putting out things. And when you tighten up, you're tightening up those glands, and they can't produce. And when they can't produce, then you know. So what did they do in early medicine, in medicine that predates anything we know? The doctor would go in, and he'd say, lay down. And he'd start a fire. And you'd be in a hut, and all of a smoke, and he'd be dancing around saying, relax, relax, relax. And you say, oh, and you relax, you know. And you are in perfect harmony with him. And so, what is an exercise that a nurse does with a patient? An exercise that a nurse does with a patient. The chop? You ever do the chop? You don't do the chop? You go up and down their back. You know about the chop. It relaxes them. It doesn't hurt them. It relaxes them. It's like a massage. And it's a very quick, beautiful massage that just completely relaxes the patient. Now, what happens when you're relaxed?
Tension go away.
Everything is in divine order. When you're not relaxed, everything is not in divine order. Now, you can't say it's not in divine order. It's in an order that we don't appreciate. But we made it happen. If you hit your hand with a hammer and keep hitting it with a hammer, that's your fault. If you stop hitting it, well, then it's starting to stop hurting, you know. But it's your fault. You put the cause in motion to make it hurt. And you keep doing it. Stop! Give me that hammer! And take your hand and hit the hammer. But you see, this early medicine was so beautiful and so easy. Okay, where does the aspirin come from?
What?
Where does the aspirin substance come from?
The
a tree.
Yes.
Now, what's the name of the tree? Yeah. Yeah. Some kind of a gum tree.
Yeah, I know that.
It comes from a tree. A tree. And this tree grows everywhere. And the native Indians used it for, you know, helping them when they had pains or anything like that. And many other cultures used it too. The aspirin is worldwide. These trees are not all the same tree, but it's different varieties of the tree, aspergum tree or whatever they call them, and they produce this substance that makes aspirin, and you pay big money for what the tree will give you for nothing. But it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. But these are all things that the early pioneers, the early peoples, the early medicines that the early peoples had thousands and thousands of years ago. And it's wonderful. Now, Hippocrates was the father of medicine, and he had a statement that I think was very relative, but was very little followed. Very little followed. He said, never give a patient anything that you haven't taken yourself. Never give a patient something that you know is going to harm him. And he said, first and last, never kill the patient. Now, that sounds most obvious, doesn't it? But never kill the patient. Well, now, if you're going to give the patient something because you wish it would work, or you think it'll work, and you hope it'll work, that's kind of rough. That's why they got animals to test these things on, you know. And they run tests on them. But now, what should a doctor do?
He should know intuitively.
He should listen intuitively and work with the patient. When the doctor goes in to see the patient, he doesn't say, well, now, what's your problem? The doctor should be a psychic. You know, he should be in tune. And he should look at that patient and say, okay, here's a prescription. Well, doctor, what's wrong with me? Just take the prescription and shut up. But what's wrong? If I tell you what's wrong with you, then you're going to have that in your mind, and then you're going to make it more difficult for the healing to take place. But you know, would a doctor ever say that to a patient? Not very often. They want to tell the patient, your husband went off with some other women, and he was fooling around before you got married, and he was just fooling around a lot. He was just really a terrible guy. And on the night that you got married, just before you got married, he had a couple of women too. Now, you say,
I don't know if I can handle it. I thought I was the only woman in his life.
Well, now, why did that person tell you that? Why did they want to mess up your world? If you don't know that, it doesn't mean anything to you. And it's probably a lie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because she wished that she could have married him. You know? It's probably a lie. But really, this is the way it goes. And this is what happens. People go around gossiping and telling stories and doing things because they want to hurt somebody. Now, we don't let that happen because we don't listen to gossip. We don't let that happen because we don't listen to tales about other people. You speak for yourself about yourself. Are you the most wonderful person in the world?
Yes.
Would you?
I am.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Are you the most wonderful person in the world? If you are, don't ask someone else to tell you that. Because why? What does the other person say? They're the most wonderful person in the world. Not you, maybe you too, maybe and you, but they are the most wonderful person in the world. And this is the most important thing for us to think of. I am number
one.
Right. I am number one, and I speak my word for me at all times, because the medicine out of the primitives was probably more beautiful and more significant than all the medicines that have come down. Because what have we done with medicine? We've merely complicated the process of the body to mend itself. And we've complicated the process so terribly for the body to mend itself that it takes time, it takes medicine, which never existed before, and which doesn't do any good. And what are they saying now about these statin drugs?
The statins,
yeah. That they do more damage than good for the body. And that people who take statins are going to be hurt. And now, what are they saying about people who have diabetes? They say people with diabetes, and it's growing, you know. And why?
More and more people are becoming that.
Yeah. Let's not add to that. But why are they saying that it is bad? Why are they saying that people are experiencing it so badly? And what are they saying? Now they're beginning to say that nothing happens. Now they're beginning to say that it is not so bad. It is not so bad. Medicine, that is, diabetics don't have to take these medicines. These medicines are not helping them. And they say, all right, maybe you know, what should a person with diabetes do? What things should that person do in his lifestyle?
Change his diet.
What?
Attitude.
Diet.
No. Well, diet, if it means staying away from...
Lifestyle.
Huh?
Change of lifestyle.
A change of lifestyle.
Yes.
A change of lifestyle. Active. Get up and move. Drink the right amount of water. And eat foods that are going to be beneficial to you. And they don't say, don't eat red meat. They say, eat less of it. They say, don't eat a lot of fats that are going to build up in your body as fat. They said, eat, and they also say, which sounds real strange, weight lift. Not a lot, but weight lift. Because if you do, you will get rid of the fat muscle, the fat, and the muscle fat will not leave. The muscle fat you want to keep, because that's for the muscle itself. But you want to get rid of the other type of fat. Now, I'm not into all that, so I'm not really studying it. And you want to get rid of that. And the way to do it is to eat foods that are going to help you do it. It's not just carbohydrates or non-carbohydrates or protein, non-protein. It's just a matter of a balanced thing. Now, Dr. Edmund Bordeaux-Seke, I think I told you about him, he went down to an island in the Guianas, and it was an island where people with
leprosy.
Yeah. Right, thank you. I told you that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did he do? What did he do? Now listen to me very carefully. The nurses and doctors who were on duty went on their leave, and he had to take over, and he had no experience there. He was a good doctor. But he found they only ate canned goods. And so he had them help him take all the canned goods and dump it in the ocean, all of it. Get rid of all the canned goods. And all that's left was to eat the natural things on the island, like pineapples and coconuts and whatever things would grow there. And by the time, which was a month, by the time the doctors and nurses came back from their vacation or their time off, all the lepers were, what do you call it, getting rid of their leprosy. It was clearing up. Really, it was amazing. Now, maybe that had nothing to do with it. Maybe what had something to do with it was here comes this funny little German doctor, or Transylvania doctor. He's from Transylvania, you know. And he comes in there, and everybody else, all the other doctors and nurses leave, and they didn't know why, you know. But here he comes. And so maybe he's Jesus. Maybe he's a miracle worker. And so he says, dump all that food, and you guys got to help me dump it, you know. And we got to throw it out, and took it out in the boat and dumped it in the deep. And then came back, and they just ate the other foods. And he says, you are healed. You are whole and perfect. And they were. Now, everything that doctor puts his hands to goes through certain rough spots, but also good spots. And he built the Golden Door Salon in California, which became a multi-billion dollar affair. He built La Puerte in Tecate, Mexico, another beautiful salon, and he built that before Golden Door, and it's a fantastic success yet today. It's where all the celebrities go for a fat farm type thing. And but he's worked on these things and done these things, and I had a chance to go and speak at those organizations a number of times and be aware of what their programs were, and it was not my thing, but it was very fascinating. Now, the primitive doctors, the primitive medicine, was mainly the witch doctor or the woman who was the cuckoo, you know, and she was intuitive. She was psychic, and that was why they thought she was cuckoo, you know. And she could see dead people, and she could see all that stuff, you know, that psychic people sometimes say they can see. And so she saw in the herbs, she would go to someone who was having an illness. She didn't have much work to do because there was only a few people that had problems in her tribe, you know. And so she would go to them and and space you out. And then intuitively she'd know, psychically she'd know. And then she'd go out into the brush and she'd take that vibration that she had from you of the illness and carry it with her in her thought, and she would look at the plants and try the vibrations on the plants and find the plant that would work. She didn't remember these from time to time because every case was different. And then she'd bring back that plant and she'd know what to do with it, whether to boil it or whether to burn it or whether to dust it or powder it or whether to chop it up and give it however to give it. She knew exactly what to do. And then she would do her incense thing and her dance around the people and then give them this potion, you know. And, of course, sometimes it was so hallucinogenic and so narcotic that they'd fall flat on their back. But then 2 days later, they'd wake up completely healed, you know. It's kind of tough. Now, I'm only saying that is one exaggerated way, but I'm sure that she worked in many other ways with just as equal a competence, and she didn't have to use drugs so strong, because all illnesses do not need strong medicines. What they need is a strong change of mind. But that's how these things work, and they're really fantastic. They're really amazing, and they're really beautiful. So we are so fantastic. We really are. Yep. And so this concludes the second part of our